I will be reading Mark 8, verse 25. Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly.
Nice job.
Thanks for it, brother.
Good morning. Today we're going to talk about the hands of Jesus, and to get us thinking about this, take a look at your hand. Take a look at your hand. And grab the hand next to you. Give it a squeeze. And take a look at it. And ask yourself as you look at that hand, you know, as you reach over and take a look at the hand, ask yourself, what does that hand tell you about that person? Oh, Kathy worked in the garden yesterday. But hands really tell a story, don't they, about a person? You know, I was when Carl was up here, I was looking at his hands. I knew what the sermon was about today. So I was thinking about it. You know, those big, burly hands. You know, can you imagine them, you know, rescuing you? The stories that they could tell. Think about, you know, I remember when I was a little guy and holding my father's hand, and we're crossing a busy street in downtown Rochester, Minnesota, where I grew up. And you know, he's dragging his little boy along, you know, before the light changes and the traffic had started again, and I just remember that big hand. My dad had big burly hands, you know, and big strong hands and rough hands, you know, calloused and you know, I just remember that. And I can always remember, you know, when Caleb and Tabitha were little, and how I just loved to look at their hands, and when they would grab a finger, and you know, I mean, just think about all those times. The variety of hands and the stories that they tell. And as I was preparing this lesson, I was reminded of a Holly Dunn song. How many are you familiar with Holly Dunn, country western singer? Daddy's Hands, Daddy's Hands. I'd like to read the words of that song for you as I share with you a variety of pictures of hands. I remember Daddy's hands folded silently in prayer and reaching out to hold me when I had a nightmare. You could read quite a story in the calluses and lines. Years of work and worry had left their mark behind. I remember Daddy's hands, how they held my mama tight and patted my back for something done right. There are things that I've forgotten that I love about that man, but I'll always remember the love in Daddy's hands. Daddy's hands were soft and kind when I was crying. Daddy's hands were hard as steel when I'd done wrong. Daddy's hands weren't always gentle, but I've come to understand there was always love in Daddy's hands. I remember Daddy's hands working till they bled, sacrificed unselfishly just to keep us all fed. If I could do things over, I'd live my life again and never take for granted the love in Daddy's hands. Daddy's hands were soft and kind when I was crying. Daddy's hands were hard as steel when I'd done wrong. Daddy's hands weren't always gentle, but I've come to understand there was always love in Daddy's hands. In this lesson, we're going to focus and concentrate on the hands of Jesus. You know, we've never seen the hands of Jesus, so I can't describe them for you, but I can only imagine. I can only imagine. And it's interesting, as I went through this lesson, how often his hands were referred to. Both his and God's hands as well, as seen in the song that we read. I always kind of enjoy it when who's ever leading singing texts me or calls me and says, "What's the sermon for Sunday?" I said, "Oh, this will stump them." But Jay came through. We've never seen Jesus' hands, but I think we can look at the things that He did, His ministry and how He touched people, and learn an awful lot from the hands of Jesus. And one of the first things that I want us to notice is that Jesus' hands were healing hands. I get the picture, the idea, that the touch of Jesus was something that was very special. And really, if you think about it, it was life-changing, wasn't it? It was life-changing. Consider, if you will, Matthew 8, beginning at verse 1. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed Him. And a man with leprosy came and knelt before Him and said, "Lord, if You are willing, You can make me clean." Jesus reached out His hand and touched the man. "I am willing," He said. "Be clean." And immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. You know, one of the things that I think is amazing about Jesus is in the story, we're reminded that Jesus was willing to touch the untouchable. And because he did that, he made a difference in their lives. And when I think about us today and our ministry and how we can make differences in the lives of people, are we willing to touch the untouchable? Jesus really was. And I think in so many ways, Jesus was all about the untouchable. Especially from man's perspective. Because there truly was no untouchable, I think, in regards to Jesus. Jesus touched the untouchable. You know, you've heard me talk about this before, the ministry of presence. And I thought about this again, and as I've described this before, that ministry of presence is really about, for me, about just being together, being with somebody in a time of need. It's so much more than just being together in our fellowship, but truly your presence here today is a ministry to me. It's a ministry of encouragement. It really does encourage me, and I hope it encourages you. But this ministry of presence is about the idea of being with people in their time of need. And I think when we think about the element of touch, it takes that whole idea of the ministry of presence to another level. Now, we do not possess the miraculous healing power that we see in the touch of Jesus. But don't underestimate the power of our touch, the power of our presence, the power of our hands. You know, when I, as an elementary school principal, I often touch my students. And I don't know if that's a safe thing to admit in this world today. When you hear about grown men touching kids, it's creates some very ugly pictures. But for me, it's very important when I interact with my students to make it personal. And I love my job because of the hugs that I get. When I go into a kindergarten room, I get mobbed hugs. It's an amazing thing. It's a great feeling. And I enjoy having that interaction with the children. It's kind of interesting as you go through the grade levels. I go into a first grade class, I won't get a mob hug. They'll line up and be polite and hug me one at a time. Maybe once in a while break into a mob hug. Second graders, very cordial about it, but they're still hugging their principal. Third grade, high five time. You know, we're not going to hug anymore, but we're still going to touch. High five. And fourth grade, I'm lucky if they even talk to me anymore at fourth grade, but... You know, that's just, you know, it's not cool to think the principal's cool as you get older. But I find myself You know, when I work with students that who are under distress and they're having problems, things are going bad in their life, I really feel like they need somebody to touch them. That's why I feel like my work as a public school administrator truly is a ministry. The other night I was watching Iowa Public TV, and there was a story on there about Vietnam boat refugees. Did anybody happen to catch that just earlier this week? And as I'm watching the story, it's just countless stories about sailors recounting, you know, when they were out on the ocean and coming across boatloads of people, just boats almost sinking because they were overloaded tremendously by people just trying to survive and get away from the war. And there was one particular boat and one story and one woman that they seemed to be focusing on as they told the story. And this particular boat was on the ocean for months. And terrible, terrible story. The death was people were dying constantly. The boat engine had given out long ago. They were adrift for months. One Navy boat came by and they were on their way to a conflict, and they couldn't pick them up, but they left them food, which saved their lives. But yet they were adrift for months, even after that contact with a U.S. naval ship. And the woman tells a story about how the family crowded next to them. The husband died, and she was cold. And she was missing her husband, and just, you know, their future was uncertain. And she looked to this woman who, you know, was a perfect stranger, except they were together just trying to survive on this boat. And she was feverish, and she said, "Will you hold me?" And their babies had gone to sleep, so in one arm she holds this woman, and in another arm she holds her baby, one of her babies. And they sleep as best they can. And in the morning, this woman was dead. But the woman tells the story how she just kept saying, "Will you hold me? Will you hold me? Will you hold me?" And I was just reminded again of how important that touch is. How important that touch is. And that woman just needed to be touched as she suffered the loss of her family and her husband and her own life. In Matthew chapter 9, beginning at verse 12, we read again about Jesus touching. On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means, that I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners." And again, that idea of the untouchable. The greatest thing that we need to realize the greatest thing I think we can help another person to realize is how important they are to God. How important they are to Jesus. To remind them of what Carl reminded us of today. That Jesus died on a cross for them. That's pretty important. John 3:16, for God so loved the world. And we need to help people understand that. And when we do, lives are changed. And that's what Jesus wanted us to do. He wanted us to share that experience, if you will, of when He first touched us and changed us. And to help others to realize that He wants the same for them. That they too are important. And again, we come back to this idea of the ministry of presence. Again, Jesus, His hands were healing. Now I want to throw up a couple of passages here. And these are passages that reference or that talk about the laying on of hands. In our text up here, Luke 4:40, "At sunset the people brought to Jesus all who had various kinds of sickness, and laying His hands on each one, He healed them." And from Acts 8:18, when Simon saw that the Spirit was given at the laying on of the apostles' hand, he offered them money. And this was, of course, the work of the miraculous works of the Holy Spirit and how they were passed on by the laying on of the apostles' hands. And Paul reminds Timothy, 1 Timothy 5:22, do not be hasty in the laying on of the hands and do not share in the sins of others. Keep yourself pure. And I just threw these passages up there looking at that statement in there, the laying on of hands, of how special that was. And I just want to ask you to consider this thought. Why? Why would God, in His infinite wisdom and His planning, make it that the way that this gift was passed on and the way that His Son did this healing involved the laying on of hands? And again, I think it helps us to see how important it is to touch and how powerful, how personal the ministry of Jesus Christ is. Not about just being in our presence, but it's about touch. Touch is comforting. It communicates acceptance. It communicates love like nothing else can. Hallmark cannot write a card that communicates what a touch does. Now, my wife is over here smirking. This is why my wife has to sit up front, so you can't see what she does up here. Because every time we get in the car and we drive, my wife always wants to hold my hand. And usually I get in trouble because I didn't initiate it. You know, sometimes she'll sit there and she'll flop her hand, you know, hinting, are you going to hold it? You know, and you know me, I'm like, you know, ignoring it, you know, getting in trouble like usual. Today I surprised her. Again, I knew what the sermon was about. So I reached over and I grabbed her hand before she could ever think about it. And she just got this, you know, you would have thought she fell all in love all over again for the first time. You would have thought I gave her a diamond ring. Well, I gave her more than that. You know, and she's got this silly little smirk on her face. And I looked at her, I said, you're pathetic. She said, no, I'm a woman. So, Jesus' hands were not just healing hands, but they were helpful hands as well. And I'd like to read for you from Mark 9, beginning at verse 14. This is a lengthy one, so I didn't put it up there on the screen. But if you'd like to open up your sword and find Mark chapter 9, I'll begin at verse 14. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them, and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet Him. What are you arguing about? He asked. The man in the crowd answered, Teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground and he foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. You unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. So they brought him. And when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. And he fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It has often thrown him into the fire or the water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. If you can, said Jesus, everything is possible for he who believes. And immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. That is a great prayer. When Jesus saw the crowd, that the crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And the spirit shrieked and convulsed him violently, and he came out. And the boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood. Another passage I'd like to share with you is in Acts chapter 10, beginning in verse 37. He says, "You know what has happened throughout the province of Judea, beginning in Galilee, after the baptism that John preached. How God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and power, and how he went around doing good and healing all who were under the power of the devil, because God was with him." Now, as we think about this incredible work that Jesus did, all these good, helpful things that he did, we need to be reminded that this is what we have been asked to do as well. We are to reflect the glory of Jesus in our lives, and it must be seen by others in the deeds that we do, the ways in which we help people. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 14, we are told to be eager to do what is good. In Matthew 5 and 16, "In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." And finally, this example in Titus chapter 3 and verse 8. "This is a trustworthy saying," he writes, "and I want you to stress these things so that those who have trusted in God may be careful to devote themselves to doing what is good. These things are excellent and profitable for everyone." Not only were Jesus' hands healing hands and helpful hands, but probably the most obvious distinction of his hands is that they were nail-scarred hands. He himself bore our sins and in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sins, and live for righteousness. By his wounds, you have been healed. His nail-scarred hands represent the love that he has for us. And again, as we've been reminded more than once already today, the sacrifice that he made personally for each and every one of us. Every time we think of that, we ought to pause and consider how significant that is. Paul reminds us in Romans 5, 7, beginning at verse 7, "Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Not only were the hands of Jesus healing hands, and helpful hands, and nail-scarred hands, but they were also inviting hands. In Matthew chapter 11, beginning at verse 28, we read, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And as Jesus has personally extended this invitation, our charge is to continue extending this invitation of the gospel through our lives today. I'm going to start reading here in Luke 14 at verse 16, but verse 23 sums it all up. Luke chapter 14, beginning at verse 16, Jesus replied, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. And at the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, 'Come, come now, for everything is now ready.' But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, 'Well, I've just bought a field. and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. And another said, I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I am on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. And still another said, well, I just got married, so I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to his master. And the owner of the house became angry, and he ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, the lame. Again, the untouchable. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there still is room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and the country lanes and compel them to come in so that my house may be full. Would you note the banquet we sit at this morning? There's still room. Who didn't we invite today? Who will not feel the touch of Jesus today? You know what? It so often starts with a touch, doesn't it? And just think about that. Think about all the things that start with a touch. Today I hope that somehow Jesus has touched your heart. Because through that touch, I know that lives are changed. And the invitation is simply this morning. What needs to change in your life? It begins with a touch from the Master. Won't you come forward and take a hold of His hand while we stand and sing the song of encouragement?